Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have bad, crazy, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, so brace yourselves for those. First of all, happy Star Wars Day. Jim, I know you're a very big fan. Anything special that you and your family do on May the 4th? Do you eat cinnamon buns in honor of Princess Leia's hair? What happens at the Garrity house?
Both of my sons wore Star Wars shirts to school today. And I said, oh, that's great, guys. You wore them because it's May the 4th. And they said, it's May the 4th? Which probably tells you a bit about their wardrobe. They have so many Star Wars shirts, they didn't even need to know. The odds are good that they'll be wearing Star Wars shirts nonetheless. It is interesting how a couple weeks ago we had Alien Day. Did you notice like every pop culture franchise is picking a day on the calendar and saying, this is our day, and all that. But nonetheless, for all the Star Wars fans out there, I raise a glass of blue milk.
Very good. Well, we don't know exactly as we're recording this what the final outcome will be on the floor of the House of Representatives for the passage or non-passage of the American Health Care Act. The fact that it's coming to the floor suggests that it's probably got the votes, but we've seen this story before, so we're not going to count the chickens before they hatch. I think we would both agree that the changes made to the bill and the MacArthur Amendment make it far better for conservatives, and we'll see what will happen in the Senate if it gets that far, Jim. But it leads us perfectly into why we need legislation to basically overhaul, gut, reform, repeal Obamacare. This is courtesy of CNN Money referring to Aetna, and it is leaving the state of Virginia. The company said Wednesday it won't participate in the state's individual market, either on the Obamacare exchange or outside of it in 2018. Though it has greatly downsized its participation in Obamacare, Aetna said it could still lose more than $200 million in its individual market products this year. That's on top of the nearly $700 billion it's lost in the 3 years after the exchanges opened in 2014. The move means Innovation Health, which Aetna formed through a joint venture with Washington, D.C. metro area insurer Innova in 2012, will also leave the Virginia market. In addition, United Health did not file with the Virginia's insurance department to offer policies in the state next year. That means that Aetna's decision will leave 25 counties in Virginia with only one remaining insurer. And as John Sexton over at Hot Air points out, that means that the one insurer is probably going to have to jack up rates so it doesn't lose money hand over fist to take on the patients that Aetna is handing over to them. So, Jim, you can obviously debate very important points inside the healthcare legislation, but there's no doubt at this point that certainly the individual market and in general the healthcare system is in deep, deep trouble.
You know, Aetna used to have that slogan, Aetna, I'm glad I met you. Yeah. Well, now Aetna has met you, and Aetna is leaving you behind. You're on your own. Tough luck, pal. The other weird thing, let's talk about the Obamacare death spiral. Greg, I thought you were going to talk about Iowa, where the last major Affordable Care Act insurer is now threatening to pull out from the state's marketplace. Basically, there would be it began with three insurers. They're down to one. And now it looks like this guy might pull out. And the vast majority of counties in Iowa would have no insurers. One of the problems with the debate about Obamacare is that it's this giant catch-all term for a massive, complicated law that changed all kinds of aspects of the of health insurance and health care. And when Republicans say, Obamacare is in a death spiral, the Democrats say, no, Obamacare is doing fine. Polling indicates that lots of Americans like it, you know. And what the Democrats are talking about is that the people who were not on Medicaid before now have Medicaid, and they're very happy with it. Hey, the government's going to pay for most of my health care. I have like a $5 to $10 copay. Yay. And most of these people are, if not dirt poor, pretty darn poor by the standards of a lot of Americans. Having said that, it's expensive, and there isn't really a good sense of how we're going to pay for this long term, and the expenses tend to boom and all that kind of stuff. But it's almost a separate argument from this in the individual market. The real problem in Obamacare, at least the biggest problem, has been in the individual market, where insurers made this deal. We get a mandate that requires every American to purchase our product or pay a higher tax, and in exchange, we will offer plans that we say are affordable. We'll put them at the bronze level, silver level, and gold level. And we'll be able to take care of these people in exchange for them having to buy it. Well, it turns out a bunch of these people on the individual market are older and sicker than the insurance companies expected, and they're requiring more. So you end up in a situation where, like, wow, they're really more expensive. We're going to have to hike the premiums. They hike the premiums and the copays and the deductibles, and all of a sudden people say, wait a minute, this isn't worth buying. To heck with this. I'm just going to pay the tax. So they end up paying the tax, but the people who stay are older and sicker. And this is how you end up with a spiral. And the Democrats kept telling us, no, don't worry, it's not going to happen. No, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Well, here we are. The individual market is collapsing right before our eyes. And we can, if you listen carefully, you can hear the Democratic plan. Chirp, 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 chirp. The sound of the crickets. Or alternately, single payer, which everybody seems to think is terrific because it means, oh, somebody else will pay. Well, yeah, unless you need something really expensive or a really rare procedure, because the government's paying, they don't feel like paying for it, and you're SOL, as they say. So that's the options for the Democrats. This is what Republicans have to tackle here, because the clock is ticking. That you're actually going to end up in a situation where you have a significant number of Americans who simply have no options for purchasing insurance because they're individuals and not part of they're not buying through their employer.
Wow. So, yeah, Democrats believe that trusting in the government to fund and make healthcare decisions is
the same government that got us into this mess will get us out of it. Don't worry. What could go wrong?
So clearly, as we switch to crazy martini number one, it's obvious that more Democrats trust government to do the right thing than Republicans, right? No. Yeah. No. Pew Research Center, the 2016 election ushered in a new era in Washington, defined by unified Republican control of the White House and both chambers of Congress. The changes in the dynamics of power in Washington have registered with members of both political parties. Somewhat more Republicans expressed trust in government today than did so prior to the election, while views among Democrats have moved in the opposite direction. For the first time since George W. Bush's presidency, Republicans, 28%, are more likely than Democrats, 15%, to say they can trust the government in Washington to do the right thing just about always or most of the time. The share of Democrats expressing trust in government is among the lowest levels for members of the party dating back nearly six decades. When it comes to confidence in the country's future, 41% of Americans say they have quite a lot of confidence in the future of the U.S., while 30% have some confidence. Republicans jumped up 19% from 40 to 59% on confidence in the nation's future. Democrats plummeting 50% to 28%. The good news here, Jim, is that only 20% overall say they trust the government to do what's right always or most of the time. So only 20% are wrong. Far more say they trust the government only some of the time, 68%. And 11% say they never trust the government to do what's right. So, Jim, the numbers are pretty low overall for Republicans who trust the government, but it's just funny to see how instantly this switches before you really have a chance to see what a new administration will do. You probably have an idea of what they will do, but the idea that conservatives, even with their people in charge, trust the government is kind of unnerving.
It is, and it really indicates that our politics has become, if not dueling cults of personality, than something close or connected to that. That basically, as long as my guy is in charge, I have faith that they're going to make the right decisions. If the other guy is in charge, I have faith they're not going to make the right decisions. Ideally, conservatism is about shrinking the size of government and its power and influence over your life, and that you're free to go out and build the kind of life that you want to build and live happily ever after. What we seem to be building towards is this attitude of, well, governments, you know, I completely trust my people. I don't trust any of your people. And kind of this bizarre sense that as long as my people are in charge, I always trust they'll do the right thing. Look, you know, neither party has a monopoly on virtue or good judgment or wisdom or competence. I get no pleasure out of saying this, but the Republicans have plenty of idiots in the party, plenty of corrupt folks, plenty of people who are selfish, plenty of people who have bad judgment, incompetence. There's a reason we earned the nickname the Stupid Party. The problem is the main alternative is the Corrupt Party. And so pick your poison, America. No, the correct answer is to whoever is in power with a certain amount of wariness. I don't even mind that much serious investigative journalism and attempts to get as maximum openness and disclosure and accountability when Republicans are in government from the mainstream media. I just wish they would do the same thing when Democrats were in charge. Some of them do it better than others. This idea, though, that we just kind of say, well, my guy's in charge and I have faith in government again, indicates a lot of Americans don't really think through that much. And they just want to have somebody with their the right letter after their name in charge. And at that point, they feel like they don't have to pay attention to government anymore. And I can't think of a circumstance that'd be better for the flourishing of corruption than to have this kind of blind faith in our leaders.
Jim, it just reminds me of the old quote from M. Stanton Evans, longtime conservative activist, a former head of the ACU and National Journalism Center, who once said, there are two political parties in Washington. There's the evil party and there's the stupid party. I'm a proud member of the stupid party. Once in a while, the two parties get together and do something that's both evil and stupid. This is called bipartisanship.
Wise. Good. I like that take. I want that stitched on a throw pillow somewhere.
All right. Let's kind of combine our first two martinis when it comes to healthcare and as it pertains to trust in government for our second crazy martini and our third martini overall. This kind of stems from the very emotional message from Jimmy Kimmel on his late night talk show, talking about the healthcare system and the very serious medical issues that his young newborn son has been through. And he basically turned it into a tearful plea, suggesting that no one should ever have to decide if they can afford to save their child's life and so forth. And a lot of conservatives have pushed back, some gently, noting the emotional state that Kimmel was in, but pointing out that his argument had some serious flaws in it. Others have gone a little more personal, saying that that's kind of the elitist position to say that the government is the one to solve all your problems and that the current healthcare system is wonderful. So the issue of whether Kimmel is elite, which I think is less of an important of an issue in the overall debate, but it came up on MSNBC yesterday, and MSNBC contributor Jason Johnson had this to say about elitism.
You want to talk about elitism, right? You want to talk about, oh, is Jimmy Kimmel elite? You're an elite if you don't have to depend on the government at some point in your life. There are sick people out there. There are seniors who need federally funded, cars to take them to and from places. There are people who have student loans. There is cancer research from the NSF that helps people throughout the entire country. So if you can say, I don't care about the government, that must be great and fine for you if you're that rich, and maybe the people in the White House feel that way. But regular people, Republicans and Democrats, realize how stupid this is. I can't wait for them to make this mistake so they get wiped out in 2018. We can have some competent Republicans and Democrats running the country.
Jim, that's such a red herring argument on a number of levels. If you've ever driven down an interstate highway and on some level you've depended on the government in some way, that's not the question. The question is whether the government, as you pointed out so eloquently in the previous martini, is controlling your life. And apparently the left used to put out government programs as necessary to help people in need. Now it seems like it's the goal is to get people dependent on government.
Greg, is the lesson here that everybody's elite to somebody?
I guess so.
I mean, no matter how unelite you think you are, there's somebody else who'd say, oh, it's kind of like when you see two guys arguing about who grew up poorer, and they're like, I had to walk both ways uphill in the snow to get to school. And the other guy says, you had a school? Occasionally, I don't know if you get it, Greg. I get, the moniker media elite thrown at me pretty regularly. Well, yeah, we do this podcast. I'm lucky enough to be employed and work for National Review. It's a magazine. Write the morning newsletter and I have my Twitter. But this doesn't really mean I influence all that much, if so was the case. Because if I really was that much of an influencer, politics would look very differently right now. I mean, So kind of the imply, if you're an elite, you have power, you're controlling things. No, not really. I'm not going to complain. I make a good living. But, ultimately, there's a question about that. Certainly, it's not like I'm, giving large donations to, I'm not the Mercers, financing. I'm not Soros, right? I'm not, who's the environmentalist? Oh, Bloomberg, who's basically single-handedly financing the gun control movement. I mean, and I guess the flip side is no matter how elite you are, there's somebody else you can point to and say, no, that guy's more elite. It's very interesting. Remember, for whatever label gets applied to you, you can probably find somebody else. I think what I found most interesting was when Hillary Clinton insisted she couldn't be an insider because she couldn't be the establishment because she was a woman.
Right.
And I remember thinking like, well, who's had more influence over U.S. policy and politics and what gets done over the last, let's say, 25 years. Let's go back to First Lady Hillary Kerr, her time as senator, her time as Secretary of State. How many more people in America had bigger influence? Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, maybe Dick Cheney, maybe Gore, maybe an Obama, and maybe Biden, like six, maybe, and even each one of them is like for one portion or another. Right? She was pretty consistent. If she's not establishment, who is? Right? you can't say you're the outsider, Hillary. So these phrases kind of don't mean much of anything. But the idea that, well, if you're dependent on government, you can't be elite. And the flip side, that if you've ever depended on government, or if you don't depend on government, well, then you're elite. We're stretching these words to have no meaning anymore. And I think that this is very deliberate. This is an effort to blur this line. And the reason you'd want to blur the line is because you're elite and you don't like being called elite. And it's all those people watching at home who are elite, other than me sitting in the TV studio getting to offer my opinion to, well, it's MSNBC, right? So dozens and dozens of viewers.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.